This is Wagner Live. If it's going on in business, he's talking about it. Real, raw, and direct. Let's do it.
This is Wagner Live, and this is Wagner Dos Santos.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Wagner Dos Santos, and this is Wagner Live episode 104. And this episode is brought to you by the Wagner Agency. Learn more at wagner.agency, or actually, I'm sorry, the wagner.agency. On this show, we review what's trending in the world of business and marketing. And today, I have the privilege of sharing this show with Jeff Tippett. Jeff is a speaker, he's an author, he's an entrepreneur, and he's also a motivational teacher. Jeff is going to let us know what he means by that later on in the show. And he is also an author and blog writer. His first book, Pixels Are the New Ink, Three Steps to Digital Domination in Your Industry, teaches thought leaders how to make money by sharing information already in their head online. And he is about to publish his second book very soon, which is tentatively titled, and he'll let us know if this tentative title is still the title, Unleashing Your Superpower, Why Persuasive Communication is the Only Force You Will Ever Need. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and welcome to the show, Jeff Tippett. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, thank you for allowing me to hang out and chat with you some this evening. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm glad you could be on the show with us.
This is going to be fun. I think we're going to connect well. We've in a lot of the same places. So I have a feeling this is going to be one of those really good conversations.
I'm with you on that, too. I think it will be as well. So, Jeff, there's a lot we want to talk about and unpack today. And there's only so much time. But you have been known to say that we all live and die based on our ability to persuade. So you want to share with our audience what you mean by that?
Yeah, I realize it's a really big, bold statement. I say it from stage. It's in my upcoming book as well. And here's what I mean by that. It doesn't really matter if you're a CEO and leading a company through change or taking it to the next level. If you're in sales, if you're a sales manager, if you're in middle management, if you're an entrepreneur seeking that first customer or funding, if you answer the phone for your company, or if you just don't want to live alone for the rest of your life, that we all live or die based upon our ability to persuade.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Yes, and I think we're going to talk a little bit more about that today, and how that's been applying to current politics. And in fact, I wanted to start the program with talking about the Forrester report that just came out. And in the report, it said that in 2019, AT&T may buy Roku and Google. AT&T may buy Roku, and Google is looking to buy LiveRamp. And for those of you unfamiliar with LiveRamp, LiveRamp is essentially another type of ad buying tool. So it signifies that Google is looking to increase their position and their sophistication with targeting people as in a micro fashion. The company LiveRamp does what they call people-based marketing, and it's very specific to behavior, psychographics, and such. And I thought it was interesting. I'm a big, I don't know about you, Jeff, I'm a big Roku fan, and I really like what they've done, you know, innovatively. Apple TV has their box, but Roku has gone so far as to partner with TV manufacturers and to create a Roku TV. And I think that's kind of cool.
I've seen that. I've participated in Roku in the past. Right now, Fire Stick has kind of been my thing. Yeah. But I've had Apple TV like years ago, so I've kind of fluctuated around with all of those. But I do like the convenience. And like my TV, as being a smart TV, mm-hmm. it has everything built right into it. It's so simple for me to use.
Absolutely. At a time I had Roku stock, and then it started to drop and I got scared and then went back up and I was like, should have stuck with them, you know? But it's interesting. It's interesting to see what may happen. Apparently they're saying in the same report that advertising and media in this category has several mergers and acquisitions that are likely to happen in 2019 and that they're starting to gain steam this year. Also in the same report, Forrester expects that Instagram and WhatsApp will save Facebook. And I think that's kind of a duh moment. I think that, and I've said this on the program before, I don't know if you agree, Jeff, but Facebook has turned into a platform that is not innovating as much and not keeping up with the new generations as much as the other applications and platforms. And it's become almost like the new white pages or yellow pages. You just have to be listed in there, right? It's like, do you have a Facebook account? Of course I have a Facebook account. I'm living, right?
Yeah. It's funny that you say that, because I see that in my home. I have three kids. They're 18, 15, and 15. And of course, I'm on Facebook and on Instagram and Snap and several others. And my oldest daughter is really active on Facebook, but her younger siblings, who are only 3 years younger than they are, just this week, Monday night at dinner, we had this conversation and we talked about Facebook. And my youngest daughter's like, Facebook, but that's just for old people. Who would be on Facebook? And I'm like, well, your sister's 18. Like, oh, she's a freshman in college. She's an old person now too. So from their perception, like Facebook is just so old and so dated. Why would you even spend time there?
Right. Yeah. It's interesting how that's changed. Right. It doesn't seem that long ago that we were jumping on Facebook for the first time and it was the MySpace replacement, and all of a sudden, you know, it became uncool.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it, you know, part of it, I guess, too, is around the evolution and how the platforms change. And sometimes, too, you know, I think my kids want to be places where I'm not. So that's kind of fun for them, just to be out there and their friends are in, you know, some of these other platforms.
Right. Yeah. And I think that Facebook has a very I think that they're very clearly understanding this, and for that reason, they started to acquire different apps like a WhatsApp and of course Instagram, which I feel bad for Snapchat that Facebook just took everything that Snapchat was doing and made it better on Instagram. And what a smack in the face. I feel bad for those guys.
My two youngest kids, they love being on Instagram. All their friends are there. They love it. It totally works for them. You know, and I have to admit, too, even though like my firm does a lot of political work, like sometimes I like just hanging out on Instagram just so I can see some pretty happy photos mm-hmm. of, you know, people and their kids and beaches and mountains, and at least in my feed, I see no political discourse whatsoever, and it's just refreshing just to go there. I feel like I can breathe again and not get stressed out and not get frustrated and not get angry. I can just go look at pretty pictures and be happy.
That's a good point. There's less divisiveness on Instagram than you see on Facebook. I mean, Facebook, you got everybody putting their flag up, and I don't know what your feed looks like, but my feed gets kind of crazy. There are middle finger emojis all over the place.
Yes, like any of this is going to change anybody's political mind. I mean, right. Really? Right. Yeah, no, it's not.
Yeah, I know. I think kudos to Facebook that they're thinking about the future. I've said often on this show that I believe that Facebook's primary platform may not survive, but they're invested well on Instagram, and they're also very well invested on Oculus. And I am a big proponent of virtual reality, and I believe that Oculus and VR and AR to some extent, but definitely VR is going to be the next leap into social media that that people very much like the movie Ready Player One, if you caught that movie by any chance. It's that is really kind of where the future is going, where people are wanting to live or not live, I should say, but they want to socialize in an avatar environment, right?
So, yeah. It's interesting. And I think back just even to my own journey in social media. I got on Twitter in October of 07, and people were laughing at me back then, you know, for being on this platform. And at that point, it was so different, so cutting edge. I even remember like Twitter going through all these hard times and dropping, and this little service called Plurk popped up, and we all jumped over to Plurk for a while. But that was innovative, and we were there. And now you look at Twitter, and you know, at least from my perspective, you know, we use it for dealing with reporters and carry on political conversations. And that's it. Like, I don't spend a lot of time there any longer. So these things evolve, and it's no different than businesses, too. Like, when we understand how to evolve and change along with the market, we can keep growing, or we can become places like Sears or JCPenney's that end up going back in the other direction if we're not willing to constantly evaluate and change up.
You know, when you talk about the political stuff, do you do Twitter chats? I mean, do you do stuff like that?
We have in the past, not much of it any longer. It's just it served a purpose for a while. We would hold Twitter town halls, but this cycle we did none of that. It just photo, and a lot of the main conversation, a lot of the people outside of your inside, like your inside ball players, mm-hmm. they're just not there. I mean, and that's just it's not part of their life. So from our perspective, it's fallen off in usage for that. It's still one of the best ways to connect with elected officials. Sure. You can often get them to respond to you and talk to you. It's a great way to connect with reporters as well. Some of the best stories I've gotten out there, I would just push something out on Twitter, and reporters come back to me for more information. Like, I'm not even sending press releases out or doing anything around that. So that in that space, it still works for us. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the other things have just really fallen off with Twitter.
You know, they never talk to me though. I've tweeted at Chris Cuomo, and I've said, "Hey man, you know, I really love what you're saying, and I was a big fan of your dad's, and blah blah." And I said nice things. He never got back to me. And then I remember Joe Biden put some stuff up there that I was like, "Oh man, that really resonates with me." And hey, Joe, and nothing. You know, just a nobody.
They don't talk to me either. I get it. I understand. I feel your pain.
Man. Well, hey, listen, since we're on the topic of politics, so the midterms, we can't not talk about the midterms a little bit. I know people are tired right now of talking about the midterms because there was all this anticipation, and then the 24-hour news pundits just, you know, trying to guess their way into results based on exit polling, and trying to also be careful because exit polling didn't really help them in the 2016 election. But I'm curious more along the lines of your methodology of persuasive communications. And I was wondering how you felt in different areas and in different campaigns, how well or how poorly some people, you know, were effective or ineffective with that. And one of the examples would be, I'm in here in Florida, so I'm going to mention Florida and say that there were a lot of people that thought that Bill Nelson was not going to lose his Senate seat, and that but I did notice, especially on OTT, a lot of streaming platforms, that there were tons of ads for Rick Scott, nothing for Bill Nelson. And I thought, that's a miss. Someone who's handling his advertising probably didn't think about streaming platforms being an important vehicle, and maybe he just did terrestrial advertising. But what do you think about even something like that?
So I think it depends a lot on just where your audience is and the people that you're trying to reach. We did a lot of highly targeted ads for clients where we would go in and, you know, we would pick them by party affiliation. We would pick them by by the age, the gender, the location, the propensity to vote, the amount of money that they've given to particular candidates. And one of the interesting things that we found at the county level here in the city where I am, and in fact, I had this conversation with the assistant, the secondary county commissioner, who is a client and a good friend of mine, and all of our county commissioners are Democrats. And some of the county commissioners spent tons of money getting their message out, and some of the county commissioners that won basically did nothing to get their message out. And so you would think that there would be a difference in the percentage of the votes that they took, but in reality, all of the county commissioners had about the same percentage. So what we saw there was that the people in this county, happened to be Wake County, they were looking at the D or the R behind their name, and they didn't care if they knew you, believed in you, or whatsoever. And even some from the R side of the aisle were saying that in this county, at least, they were repudiating Trump and the message there that was out there. And so several, like at our state legislature, we just broke the supermajority of the Republicans in the House and the Senate. In the Senate, in very gerrymandered district. So, you know, what we saw was that voters had made their mind up. They didn't even care if they knew you or not. They wanted to know what your affiliation was, because that's where they were sticking.
That's a really good point. I feel, and you certainly delve into this as a profession more than I do. But my feeling was that people have been, of course, very, very divided over the presidential election and everything moving forward. And this time they felt that they already knew where they fell. They were either Democrats or Republicans, and they were going to vote along party lines right down the line. Independents, of course, you know, there was an opportunity to perhaps sway those one way or another, right?
Yeah. And you know, we heard lots of talks about like this massive blue wave that was coming. We heard Trump talk about how there wasn't going to be a blue wave. But when you look at it, at the end of the day, you know, there's a lot that can be drawn to say like half our country is in one place and half our country is in another place. And we kind of landed on that, even like looking at D.C., where now the House is going to be controlled by Democrats and the Senate is going to be controlled by Republicans. And in places that support Trump, they're full on, and places that repudiate him, they're full on. It's like there's no middle ground in any of this right now. It's at like 70%, and CNN exit polls, 70% of people said that the number one reason that they vote was to send a message to Trump, right, whether it was yes or no. And we kind of, you really kind of see that play out across the country.
Yeah, and it seems, if I'm understand correctly, that that's been so powerful right now that regardless of any type of well thought out strategic persuasion, that it's become very hard to crack that, right?
Yeah, you know, in fact, we know that most people, I think it was more than 30 days at the CNN exit polls, they had known exactly who they're going to vote for the past 30 days. Like nothing changed for them, you know. So they were galvanized. You know, they just knew where they stood on that.
Well, you must be, it must be kind of like CPAs, how they feel after tax season is over. You must feel a little sigh of relief that you can start normalizing your business a little bit now.
Yeah, absolutely. And for us in the business life cycle, you know, from this time of November through December, we get a little bit of a break. This is where we can kind of catch our breath in all of this. And then when our General Assembly comes back, that's when we pick up more of the public affairs work and helping our clients move policies forward, or stopping policies as well for the you know, the next session. But part of that too is just kind of seeing where do we land, who's going to be in office, who's going to be pushing what agenda. So we get a little bit of break, which is good for me. I can do a little bit more PR work around my book, a little bit more marketing around my book, and get ready for a busy speaking season in 2019 as well.
So your business, you know, public affairs and politics is only a part of the client work you do, right? What's the scope of work that you handle?
So we do a lot of political, of course. That is just like these seasonal periods. You know, you have your every other year, and of course 2020 will be huge. The off years for that in our area is a lot of municipal work, which is not a lot of money, but it's some fun campaigns where you can really get in and support people. And then we do the public affairs. So for us, and everyone defines all this differently, but for us, public affairs looks like clients that bring us on to support their policy prescriptions. So in that, we work with the lobbyists, we work with the elected officials, we work with the media, and we work with the general public. And what we do, our specialty, is to go in and help build grassroots campaigns, grassroots supports to help our clients move things forward. For example, we had a great one last session where we were hired by the National Restaurant Association in Washington, D.C., to run a campaign that we called Free the Mimosa. In North Carolina, you could not buy alcoholic beverages on Sundays before noon. Blue laws, right? What are you right. supposed to be doing before 12 o'clock? You're supposed to be in church. You are not supposed to be drinking. Now, after 12 o'clock, it was fine, man. Go drink all you want. But up to 12 o'clock, it was Jesus time. Right. No drinking. And so we got hired to come in and build a grassroots campaign to support the lobbying, the fantastic lobbying efforts that were already going on. So we called the campaign Free the Mimosa. And that was, you know, catchy language. What we knew was, and this was one of those pop-up campaigns where I didn't have time to do polling. I didn't have time to test messaging, nothing. We had to go straight with gut on everything. Mm-hmm. And I knew that many people had gone to a restaurant on Mother's Day or Easter or someone's birthday and tried to order a mimosa at 11 o'clock only to be told, no, you can't buy it. Or they've gone to the grocery store to pick up beer for an afternoon game, only to be told from the clerk, no, you can't buy that. So I knew there was this pain inside of people, and we don't like being told no, do we? Right, not no. really. So I could speak to that pain, and I could tell them, look, this is your chance to free the mimosa. And what ended up happening was, for our client, we built the largest grassroots coalition for any of their campaigns in any of the states that they had ever seen before, and we were able to help push this over both chambers and to the governor's signature.
Very impressive. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's a lot of fun. You know, and you know, as it comes to persuasion and that, like, you know, from my perspective in building out this campaign and working on the strategy, I couldn't make this about my client. Now, my client wanted success, but I couldn't make it about them and what they were trying to accomplish. What I had to do was I needed the individuals, the citizens, to get involved in this. So I had to speak to their needs. I had to speak to what it was that they wanted, the pain that they felt, the change that they wanted to see, and offer them this. This is the tool. You want to be able to order a mimosa? Great. Sign my petition. And for us, they said 1,000 signatures would be fantastic. That would just be huge. Guess what? We got 1,000 signatures the first week of the campaign, and it was a 6.5-week campaign. We got over 8,500 signatures on this petition, and we could activate this list. So when we were before the ABC committee, we could send out action alerts and get them calling and emailing. We blew this thing up, and we created, and we had fun with it too. Like, right. We didn't pick a fight with anybody. Yeah. This is about mimosas, man. That's fun stuff,
nobody
right?
Fights over mimosas.
No, we want you laughing. We want you to have fun, but we want to give you what you wanted.
Yeah. Sometimes they fight over Bellinis, but not but that's the Italian rage. You know, that's what it is. That's cool. So let's talk about your new book. So. Did we get the title correctly? Is that still?
You did. The title, my publisher signed off, the editor, we're all there. Unleashing Your Superpower, Why Persuasive Communication is the Only Force You'll Ever Need.
So what can, well, first of all, when can people buy it? Is it going to be available on Amazon and so forth?
It will. It'll be ready January 1st. It'll be rolling off. So I'm excited that we're to this point. Good. That we're so close on that. So yeah, absolutely. They'll be
nice
able to
state selection, you know.
Yeah. Kick off the new year, right? New speaking campaigns, new book, you know, just roll this whole thing out at once. Right.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, what you cover in the book and what people can expect, you know, reading your book.
I think you'll like this as a marketing professional and a guru in marketing. I think, mm-hmm. you, in fact, you probably could have written the book for me and done a better job. But
I doubt that.
in the book, and I build this around the heartfelt and the emotional story that I tell of adopting a baby through the third world country of Haiti. And I talk about the struggles that I went through, and I talk a lot about what I learned about myself in this process and changes that had to happen inside of me to make it through the 6.5 month process of going through this adoption. So I talk quite a bit of that around that. I talk too about, I have a chapter on manipulation versus persuasion, because what I find is that oftentimes people think manipulation and persuasion are the same thing. Therefore, persuasion has to be a dirty word. And persuasion is not. Persuasion shows leadership. You know, as a marketing person, you have to persuade users. So I talk about the difference between manipulation, and oftentimes we might think we're persuading, but we're really manipulating. So I break that down. I help people understand the difference. And here's my experience. When people understand that and they see the difference, they are all in to persuade. They are ready to persuade once they understand the difference. So I go through that, talk a little bit about messaging, like how do you craft a simple message? Oftentimes we mess up so much on the message of what we're saying, and we don't get the right message out there. So talk about crafting that message, how to do it simply, how to capture people's attention early. As a marketer, you know, like we only have seconds to capture people's attention. So how do we do it? How do we do it early? How do we create messages that are sticky with people? That Renee, because what we want is like an hour after we talk to people, or 2 hours, 2 days, 2 weeks, we still want that message resonating in their head. So how do we create something that's sticky there for them? I do talk in the book, a very heartfelt section on helping others find their win so that you win. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a great secret sauce, but it's also, I encourage people, especially from stage, to check our motives. Like, do we really care about the people that we're working with, or are we just about our way and about getting what we want out of other people? So by checking our intentions and setting our intentions to the right place of helping others, how to make connections, then just kind of wrap up. I talk about like positioning and call to action. I talk about trust and how to build trust with your audience. And then I wrap up going back to the adoption story, and I talk about the greater good, and I challenge people to pick their head up, and I give examples of think through the greater good as a motivational tool.
You know, I like that you mentioned the sticky messaging, because that's something I've talked about quite a bit in the past. So I lit up when I heard you use that same term, because in my business with advertising and marketing, you know, we're buying media, and old traditional media measurement has been based on impressions and GRPs and stuff like that. And I always say that impressions is not what you want to go after. You want those sticky numbers. You want because you walked by the television set and you became an impression, doesn't mean that you grabbed anything from that spot. So what I want to know is, I want to know those sticky numbers. How did we connect with you? How did we make a brand imprint into where not only are you connected, but you may even talk about it to someone else? So I like that. I was going to ask you, so kind of dialing back a little bit, you know, what caused you to want to speak and write about the power of persuasion and persuasive communication? Where did that come from?
Well, my background wise, I have a master's in English, and so being able to communicate has always been extremely important to me. Being on stage, you know, I love it. For me, I kind of carved out the specialty area in persuasive communication because I love communication. I love talking. I love conveying. I like giving ideas out to people. But what I found was, and especially in my field, if I can't, I can communicate fine, but if I can't persuade you to the next level, I am not as effective. So being able to, if it's a political ad, or if it's helping to move a company forward, if it's closing a sale, if I can help you persuade other people and move along, and again, not manipulating them, but persuade them along in the journey, especially as I define manipulation versus persuasion, you know, when they're just as on board as I am on board with what's going on. And I know that, like when I'm talking with clients, and you probably have something very similar, like when I'm talking with clients or, you know, I'm moving people forward, when I look for two magical words to know if I manipulated them or I persuaded them. And if at the end of a conversation, I hear them say, or some form of this, say, that's right. I know I persuaded them. So in other words, when they say, hey, Jeff, that's right. You are bringing a solution to my company. Hey, Jeff, that's right. You are the keynote speaker that we need for this. What's happened is they bought into my truth. They take it for themselves. They want this just as much as I want it, right? They want it for themselves. And at that point, I've persuaded them and I haven't manipulated.
Ah, that's great. That's a great example. That's a great distinction. Well, hey, we could go on this. This is awesome. I really enjoyed our discussion prior to the show. I've really enjoyed this. I encourage everybody that's watching this and tuning in now, and also those of you that are listening to the podcast and the replay, definitely go out and learn more about this man and read his first book. Get ready for maybe pre-order if that's an opportunity soon on the second book that's coming out January 1. And if you have a chance, catch him speaking. Do you have any kind of speaking dates right now that are going on through the rest of this year, or are they continuing next year?
I have one last one this year. I take a sabbatical at the very end of the year, so these big years from speaking because of the political work. I'll be back on stage in my hometown, surprisingly enough, next month to close out for a big red tie, for a red carpet, black tie event. I'm excited about that. Right. And then I kick off January heavy on, and of all places, while everyone in the U.S. is freezing in January, I got booked to go to St. Martin to speak. So I'll be taking my flip-flops and my swimsuit along. So you guys enjoy the snow and all that, because I'm going to go thaw out and speak in St. Martin in January.
Wow. Life's rough for you. I'm very sorry for you. So if they want to learn more about you, what website would you direct them to?
My main website is jefftippett.com, and it's JeffTippett. And if you get any close variations, I've got AdWords on all the misspellings of my name, so it'll pop up. You'll find me without any problem. You can sign up for my newsletter there. You can read more about my book and see my speaking topics as well.
Well, great. Well, thank you. Listen, guys, that's our show for today. Definitely, I would like to thank you, Jeff Tippett, for being our guest today, and to all of you listeners and viewers, we're going to be back again next week, where you can catch Wagner Live every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. But, you know, as I always say, if you can't make the live show, that's okay, because you can always catch the podcast or video replay. Yeah, you can replay in the replay and on our website, Wagner.live. Well, until next time, thank you. See you later.
You've been listening to Wagner Live.
Wagner is an advertising agency executive, and it's his passion to talk about business without the fluff and blowing smoke. Having owned and operated several different businesses since the age of 17, and with 20 years of experience in advertising and marketing,
he may be just a tad bit qualified.
We hope you enjoyed the show. Catch him on social media at Wagner Live and hit the website at Wagner.live. We'll see you again next week.